So much gold, so many politicians under my
toes.
I got my side making moves from the inside. Noah's flood, crude oil, mud. Moloch's chalice filled with children's blood. Bought the jury, bought the judge. Got the whole White House filled with bugs. Paid off Congress behind closed doors. Blackmailed senators with my whores. USA fighting my wars. Underage boys, we use them like toys. Young girls get pearls from pedophile goals.
If you want the money, you will do what we tell you.
And if you say no, we will simply just... Graves, we dig them. Elections, we rig them. Claim all our ops, suffer anti-Semitism.
Christ is king.
That's illegal under our regime. Now kiss the wall, bitch. Let me hear the boys sing.
We getting AIPAC money. We getting AIPAC money. We getting AIPAC money. We're getting AIPAC money. We're getting AIPAC money. We're getting AIPAC money. We're
Hold
getting
up.
AIPAC money.
Hold up.
We hold up.
Now, yo, let me just say a little thing about this. I wanna see your foreskin, I wanna be at your bris. I wanna be a vampire, let me suck on your dick. I wanna see politics, I want control. Wanna make you my slave, that's my ultimate goal. I wanna pick apart your culture, wanna make you my bitch. Let me... Is that a serious ass question? Red Eli Vissel's night? Have you not, what fuckers? And now I'm thinking about it.
Ooh, congratulations! Congratulations! You did it! You defeated America. You defeated the Patriots. You shoehorned in your utterly despicable DEI coach, carpetbagger. Congratulations! You must feel good about yourself. Enjoy it. You know, round of applause for yourself. It'll be the last time ever, so enjoy it. Enjoy it while you can, because, yeah, so that's the last time ever, and it's about to get real bad for you guys. So, you know, really enjoy it now. Revel in it now. Soak in the victory, you guys, because... You had a lot of fun. You had a lot of fun. And this is, you know, humiliated a bunch of good people, you know, stole an election really in an incredible way. I mean, the amount of money you guys poured in, it's something to behold. Really, it's astonishing, actually. So congratulations, AIPAC. Congratulations, Jews. Congratulations, Israel. You did it. You destroyed another good man whose only crime was not being fully submissive and subservient to you. Not that he was like an anti-Semite or anything, but just not fully a slave. So you've destroyed him. Congratulations. I hope he runs for president now. I'll be campaigning for him. So yes, folks, Thomas Massie lost yesterday. Rather unfortunate and rather unlikely. We have a lot of questions about how this came about. And put it simply... It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense, actually, how this could even come about. We'll bring you the numbers. We'll show you the charts and everything. But I believe we can go to clip number 16 here. Or actually, I think we'll go to 15 first. No, 16's right. Let's go to 16. This was Thomas Massie's watch party. He gave his concession speech there. I'll show you some clips from that. But let's just do a little compare and contrast from Thomas Massie's party to Ed Gowrain's party. And while this isn't, you know, representative necessarily, obviously, from the outcome of the election, I think it does say quite a bit. Not that, oh, look, Thomas Massie has, you know, slightly more young people there, but that Thomas Massie has an entire, you know, meeting hall filled with energetic activists supporting him, and Ed Gowrain's, I guess you'd call it a party. I mean, it looks a little bit more like a lobby at a dentist, like a bunch of bored people kind of standing around, not sure what to do. It really is a comparison to make. Let's go first to clip number 16. Here's Massey, gigantic hotel room, packed to the brim, energetic, youthful, numerous. Now let's cut immediately to clip 15. Here's the Massey party and the Galrain party. It's in some sort of bar and a hotel lobby. And there's, I think I see a dozen. I think there's at least a dozen people there. There are dozens of us, I tell you. And the big empty space really echoes. The echoes are really something there in that big empty space. So look, is it, you know, I guess this isn't how you win elections. You don't actually win elections by having a bunch of motivated, you know, youthful people in the community actually supporting you. What you have is a bunch of AI lies fed to boomers through Fox News. That's what it takes to win an election now. And again, it just kind of doesn't make sense. It kind of doesn't make a lot of sense. The numbers don't really particularly make a lot of sense. And just the energy and enthusiasm, it just doesn't exist for Ed Galrain. And of course, the fact is, this was 100% the boomers' decision. This was a boomer election. The boomers, that is the people over 60 or over 65, are the only people that voted in favor of Ed Galrain. I guess there's just so many of them that they overwhelmed every other age block. From Nario Nawfal, Ed Galrain beat Thomas Massey in Kentucky's 4th Congressional District primary without winning a single age group under age 65. Seniors carried him across the finish line. Every other demographic voted for Massey. That's how powerful the 65-plus block has become in low turnout primaries. You don't actually need to win the room. You just need to own the one corner that actually shows up. Republican primary for Kentucky's 4th Congressional District poll. If the Republican primary for the House of Representatives was held today, who would you vote for? 18 to 29-year-olds went with Massey about 80%. 30 to 44-year-olds went by about 65%. 45 to 64, 53%. So all of these, majority for Thomas Massey. It was only the 65-plus who voted for Ed Galrain at 65% and Thomas Massey at 35. So thank you, boomers. Thanks, you freaking idiots. You know those ads were AI, right? Has anybody have your grandchildren explain AI to you, and then maybe you won't fall for it so much. And look, I know there's a lot of great boomers that listen to us. I'm obviously not talking about you, calm down, but the rest of your cohort, good Lord, I've never seen anything like it. The, I don't even know what you call it, self-importance of the boomers, the fact that our entire society basically exists to serve them and them alone. And we can get into some of the numbers, but you know, we literally spend like trillions and trillions of dollars just on Social Security and stuff, which cannot be cut. But of course, by the time I'm that age, probably won't exist. Somebody posted yesterday that the political stance of the average boomer is, in fact, that famous painting of the Titan eating his children. It's basically if you just picture a giant monster eating their own children because they think they taste good. That's basically where we're at with boomers. And it's very sad. It's very sad to see. This is from Calvin Froedge on X. So what, we're supposed to believe that a guy who only had 75 donations from Kentucky, an empty victory party, and nobody at his rallies managed to double turnout from 2024, plus get all 10,000 mail-in ballots? KY4 may have been outright fraud. Those numbers don't make any sense. I can't help but see this and go, is this why we didn't pass the SAVE Act? Like, are we going to pass the SAVE Act now? That would be perfect. Is like, as soon as this race happens, they're like, yeah, you know, let's go ahead and pass that SAVE Act now. We've been kicking the can down the road a little bit. I think it's time to finally do it. Yeah, there we go. This is, put this on your bumper stickers, boomers. You can replace the Trump sticker with this image. Is this Kronos eating his children? Is that right? So there you go. You are Kronos the Titan devouring your own children and thinking that your children are idiots for expecting not to be devoured. Yeah, it really is. It really is the worst. And I mean, the worst thing about it, there's got to be a movie scene. I'm picturing, like, isn't there a scene in Pinocchio where, like, all the kids that are going to be shipped off to the island to be turned into donkeys and put into slave labor? So maybe I'm thinking of a different movie, but it's like you're sitting there going, guys, you're being tricked. You're being fooled. You shouldn't get on the ship. You shouldn't go with these people. They're going to enslave you. And they're all on the ship like, see you later, idiot. You dummy. You thought it was going to be, you know, bad to be on the ship. But here we are on the ship going to the island of pleasure. So see you later, idiots. And we're like, okay, fine. Have fun. Enjoy yourself, you asses. You absolute asses. That's basically where we're at. Is I got a bunch of people going, yeah, you know, Thomas Massey lost. Sucks for you. It's like, no, it sucks for all of us. No, you have participated in the, you know, abject takeover of America by a foreign power. Why do you think this is going to go well for you ever? It really is sad. And look, there's a bunch of people online right now that are claiming this is about supporting Trump. They're bringing up the fact that Thomas Massey voted against, you know, big, ridiculous spending bills as if that's why he wasn't elected. No, he wasn't elected because the Jewish community in America targeted him for removal because he wasn't sufficiently pro-Israel or pro whatever their pet causes were and are, which continue to be not just the war in Iran, but basically everything else negative that Trump is involved in. So let's go and go to clip number 35 now, because I don't want to come across as an anti-Semite, God forbid. So here's a Jewish person admitting it verbatim. Let's watch.
I think it is a good thing if Massey and the people like him and others believe that if you cross the line into anti-Semitism,
if you cross the Jews,
Jews are going to use the power that we have openly to go for you, because what other recourse is there? Are we just going to sit here and take it, beg for scraps, hope that nice people are nice to us? The Democratic Party is going explicitly anti-Semitic. We can see it happening. People are getting benefits, as Seth says, for being anti-Semites. That seems to be part of an appeal in primaries to the left in the party. We have to use what means there are at our disposal. And in my view, and I'm going to put it blank, that is Jewish money. There is an enormous amount of Jewish money in politics, by which I mean Jewish donors, wildly disproportionate, not only charitably, but politically. And when I say charitably, I mean nobody really knows the numbers. Jews make up 2% of the population, according to some studies. Jews make up 20% of the charitable contributions made in the United States annually. That is a tenfold. Think about that. Think about the disproportion of that. And in politics, it's pretty close also. And if that money isn't used, why do people give money? Because they want to influence elections to get people elected who reflect their views. Well, this is an existential issue for Jews. And the Jews who explicitly give money because they want to make it clear to anti-Semitic candidates that they are going to have to go through a buzzsaw and that they are not going to simply waltz in and be, you know, be, if they're treated with kid gloves by the New York Times, we are double time going to do what we can to expose who they are, to find out what we can find out about them that will harm them, and that we will do what we can to prevent them from taking office. What other choice does American Jewry have?
You could stop being awful. Here's the first suggestion. Stop doing all of the stuff that hurts us and makes people dislike you. Do you notice how that never even enters in to the conversation? Because, again, it's got to be predicated on the concept that anti-Semitism is anybody disagreeing with the state of Israel, anybody criticizing Jewish people for any reason, and that that criticism or that outrage or whatever it is born from some corrupt aspect of European DNA. Therefore, it has no cause. It has no solution. It just is. It just exists. And so in that case, of course, the only thing you can do is try to snuff it out by, you know, using the endless Jewish money and influence over the press and the, you know, mainstream media to destroy that person's life, as, of course, a symbol to everybody else. Right? He said that right there. Like it, that clip is pretty amazing, to be honest with you. It's pretty amazing how he literally just lays out the thinking in a way that you only ever heard from, like, Nazis. Like, that's basically the Nazi description of how Jews control America. And he's just laying it out there verbatim, going, we use the incredible, you know, we use Jewish money to punish people for going against us. And we want everybody to know that opposing us, I think the metaphor he used was like going through a buzzsaw, right? Okay, so why would we allow this? Like, why are we allowing this? So again, John Podoretz, or whatever that guy's name is, just comes right out and says it. And again, there's a mental illness or something that's there, where Thomas Massie is just obviously not an anti-Semite in the first place. Like, I could even sort of understand, at least be more reasonable, if it was literally like, you know, if he was saying this about, you know, whoever, Dan Blitzerian, you know, say what you want about Dan Blitzerian. He'd be the first to say he's kind of an anti-Semite. Like, if it's somebody who's like literally all they do every day is just be like, Jews bad, Jews bad, then it's like, okay, that guy's an anti-Semite. Again, you're allowed to be an anti-Semite, and I think it's, you know, ridiculous that we have these ethnic loyalties dictating who gets elected in this country, and not to even throw Dan Blitzerian under the bus. Do you see what I'm saying? That they're treating Thomas Massie, who literally is just like, I don't vote for any foreign aid and I don't like the war in Iran, and that's enough for them to treat him like an existential threat? It's a pathology, but it's a useful pathology. Because as he lays out there, the purpose is terror. It's terrorism, really. It's terrorism through the electoral process. It's meant to strike fear into the heart of other congresspeople, other congressmen and women, to tell them, you're going into the buzzsaw if you cross us. And crossing us doesn't have to be explicit. You don't have to be an explicit anti-Semite. Better safe than sorry, right? Better just go over and above to do what we want. That way, you know, you're safe, because even if you're choosing something, you know, on principle, even though you have no problem with Jewish people, but, you know, think that Israel's interest is at odds with America's interest, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If you oppose us, you will be destroyed. We'll go above and beyond. We will do it out in the open. Nobody's going to stop us. And, you know, we'll ruin your life. And hell, they'll kill you if that doesn't work, right? We saw the pressure brought against Charlie Kirk before he mysteriously died. You know, it was always a question whether Thomas Massie's wife died of natural causes. I think that, you know, is even more valid of speculation now, because that's what happened here. That's what happened with this Thomas Massie election, is that the Jewish Americans and the Jewish Israelis basically played their hand, showed their cards, and said, this is who we are, this is how we act, and are basically daring anybody to do anything about it. So that's a very big change from how it's been for my entire life. The same amount of power has always been wielded. The openness with which they are now using this power to destroy good people, it is deliberate. I know Alex was going off about this in the beginning of his show, and I thought he put it very well, that there is this, you know, deliberate feedback loop where they want to create anti-Semitism in order to, you know, get laws passed and that sort of thing. We'll get into some of the laws being passed right now. But I think you have to understand that it's about more than that. It really is a matter of psychological manipulation. And it all just goes down to humiliation. It's just humiliation. It's we get to do whatever we want, act in the most outrageous ways you can possibly imagine. I mean, I'll show you some videos today because we're going to talk about this all day. I mean, this is going to be the topic more or less. We're going to be joined by Dr. Malone later to talk about ticks. But I think I'm going to be able to put into context what John Podoretz just said in terms of why they see the need to create terror to achieve their ends and how useful it is. Now, that is the deliberate purpose of this, to send a signal to everybody, you and I included, that they will be acting outrageously and they will be doing whatever the hell they want. And as I look at the world around today and all these things being, you know, implemented, I got to say, I think we've got 2 years. In fact, I'm like absolutely sure that we have 2 years and that everything that we're seeing happen right now is all in preparation for a global communist overthrow of Western governments to install essentially a Jewish superstate over the entire world. I think that's what the data centers are being prepared for. I think that's what the digital ID is being prepared for. I think that's why the war in Iran happened. I think the shortages and the rationing plays into that. And as we know, and as has been talked about by the people doing it, they plan on May Day 2028 to do a general strike of every major union in the country to grind our economy to a total halt until they get the demands that they want, which include basically a total socialization, communization of our government. So that's about the timetable we're looking at. I mean, as you look around and you see all these things going into place and you hear all the stories about the elite preparing their bunkers and preparing to shut down, I think we're 2 years out of a full-on, like, culling of the human race. And I think that's the date to be established, May 1st, 2028. And I think if we make people aware of this and make people aware of how this is literally exactly 100% to the letter how communist revolutions happened in Russia and were attempted in Germany, then we can look at how those revolutions in the first case succeeded, in the second case failed, and learn how we can combat the new revolution that's coming in just under 2 years. Does that make sense to everybody? As you look around and you see things like the immigration camps being built, but no immigrants being put in there, the anti-Semitism bills quietly being passed in state offices, the ICE QRF force, the conflating of anti-Semitism with terrorism, the denaturalization of American citizens so they can be shipped off to prison camps. Do you see what I'm saying?
We have to get more.